Audio Discourse of The Plan for Restoration of Constitutional Government by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 6. This is a continuation of Part 3 of the plan from Episode 5. Scenario for larger population areas. As stated before, the flank or rear of the constitutional movement cannot be exposed to a threat. Such enterprises should not be conducted until the area around the large population area, all towns around the perimeter and substantial area under control, has been secured. As expansion within the rural areas occurs, the large population areas that an enemy or rebel force exists on your flank and must be protected against. These are, except in rare circumstances, more cleanup operations and are not necessary to be secured prior to expansion of the controlled areas through the remainder of the county or state, so long as they don't pose a direct threat to other operations. Considerations. Smaller population areas are more easily brought into cooperation with the constitutional forces for a number of reasons. A tendency of the people to be responsive to the effort since they are already more independent and self-sufficient. Smaller and probably more sympathetic existing government forces and personnel. Greater numbers of constitutionally sympathetic people versus smaller numbers of opposition or rebel forces. Geography, logistics, communication, and coordination are easily utilized for the achievement of obtaining control. On the other hand, larger population areas pose a number of obstacles to achieving control. Larger existing rebel forces, potential for outside rebel forces to maintain control over these areas, dependency of the population on existing rebel government structure for daily lifestyle, high density of security cameras to allow tracking of constitutional forces, urban topography requiring large numbers of constitutional forces broken into small, more vulnerable groups to secure areas. Looking at these larger population areas, we can look at what might be used to our advantage. Large populations amassed in a relatively small area provides a means of a form of imprisonment or confinement. Dependency on regular supply lines for provisions. Communications, power, and energy sources concentrated into a few corridors. So siege is a tactic. So we can look at what effect the colonists had on certain cities such as Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and what effect the British had on Charleston to understand that siege tactics can be effective. Boston was encircled by colonial forces within days. The British were confined to the area and could only obtain supplies from residents of Boston or through ships entering the harbor unopposed. The siege created abnormal hardship on the British, especially in cold weather when fences and buildings were torn down to provide fuel for cooking and heating. In New York, the British were pretty much isolated in New York and on Long Island. Any effective move beyond these boundaries had to be sufficient force to provide protection. Forage locally for provisions and lines of supplies and communication had to be maintained open. During the British occupation of Philadelphia, supply was no problem as the Delaware River provided passage of large ships for resupply. A brief effort at Fort Mifflin, Mud Island, was defeated after a British assault on the fort. However, with Washington's army nearby, expeditions outside of Philadelphia were nearly ineffective. The British besieged Charleston and ultimately forced the largest colonial surrender of the Revolutionary War. Though well fortified, the colonial forces could not withstand the constricted supply lines imposed by British forces on available routes. Now times have changed. Instead of relying upon shipping for most supplies, ground routes and aircraft have become the means of resupply. When Russia blockaded the ground routes to Berlin, massive airlifts supplied all the needs of a major city for 10 months. This required over 200,000 flights delivering 13,000 tons, 26 million pounds, of supplies every single day. to provide for the 2 million people in the western sector of Berlin. The problem exists, however, when you have large population areas. The ability of that area to sustain itself is not possible. Means of convenience, or soft siege. There are two means available to begin a siege that would have an effect of converting residents of such an area to the constitutional side. The first, of convenience. The second, a fallback position of necessity. The first would begin by securing major transportation arteries with checkpoints. These checkpoints would define the limits of the besieged area and would be placed in practical locations, easily supplied and defendable against minor attacks, bridges, mountain passes, and valley and other choke points. The checkpoints would serve the purpose of limiting traffic to and from the besieged area. Those who might be supportive of the rebel forces would not be allowed in. All that wished to exit would have to take a loyalty oath and would not be allowed to return until the area was secured. Denial of any existing commercial transportation of other than necessity, food, medical supplies, etc., would result in reduction or closing of manufacturing facilities not necessary to the benefit of those outside of the besieged area. Commercial traffic going into the besieged area would be controlled. Over time, if the area was not tending towards the acceptance of constitutional forces and the plan, the flow of necessities could be continued. If there was a reluctance or resistance, restricting of supplies would begin to pressure those within to submit. Both rail and water transportation could be affected in the same way. These should be controlled as above at convenient locations and may often be quite removed from the site of the siege. Large population areas need massive amounts of power, water, and other transportable or transmittable supplies to maintain themselves. Distribution centers, waypoints, pumping stations, aqueducts, or other elements of the various systems can be utilized to effectively control what supplies reach the besieged areas. Any reduction begins to bring pressure upon those inside of the besieged area. Pressure can be brought to the level of inconvenience to send a message to those inside. As time goes on and resistance continue, greater restrictions will move that inconvenience into the realm of hardship. Only the hardcore will remain under such conditions. Complete closure is decimating. If an assault is to be mounted by the total cutoff of supplies, the will and abilities of any resistance can be reduced to almost nothing. The above means of convenience in besieging will most likely come under attack. Preparation for security and defense should be implemented at the outset of any such operations. The other siege, means of necessity or hard siege. If it is determined that any of the above means creates an unsustainable risk to the constitutional forces, the means of necessity might be implemented. The practicality of the convenience means that it is controllable. That constrictions in supplies are controlled, as well as ingress and egress to the besieged area. Less risk to life is created, since the imposition would escalate at a controlled rate, allowing people to leave so long as they are willing to take the loyalty oath and relocated where they can resume life without the inconveniences. The means of necessity provide far less control over the results of activities and consequently put life at greater risk than the means of convenience. This is a consideration to be taken by the Correspondence Committee along with the Intelligence and Liaison Committees in formulating news releases and for negotiation with rebel forces. The means of necessity require destruction, not control, of all the above-mentioned services. There is no means by which to allow people to leave the besieged area unless they have escaped and are found and provided an opportunity to take the loyalty oath or be returned to the besieged area. If one ground route for people leaving the area can be maintained with a degree of safety, it can be utilized to allow those wishing to leave to provide for a safe route of evacuation. If not, then roving patrols should be utilized to the extent necessary to provide as high a degree of control over those leaving as possible. This would suggest that alternate ground routes out of the area should be damaged or destroyed to prohibit exit by those means. This is not a controlled exit, rather it is a denied exit. Likewise, all existing necessities would be restricted unless a single route were maintained open. Due to the reversion of means, any traffic attempting to enter the besieged area would be deemed hostile as contraband and destroyed or sequestered for the use of the constitutional forces. Regarding the necessity means being applied to utilities, considerations should still be made for the preservation of life where possible. This would mean that in colder climates, continuation of power or supplies for heating should be near last on the targeting of such services. Water, too, so necessary for life, should be the last consideration for interruption. Communications should be one of the first services to be denied. It will easily be reestablished for communication between constitutional forces and rebel representatives for the purpose of negotiations. Discontinuance of electrical services would impose a great inconvenience on the majority of the population while not being that detrimental to life. All hospitals and many other sources have emergency generators. Those who rely on electricity for heating can find efficient, non-electrical means of heating. Refrigeration will be curtailed, so the inconvenience of not having frozen, preserved food would take an emotional toll on the people. Where possible, and without creating additional risk, notice of utilities to be affected should be given. Hearts and minds is, of necessity, a major concern of the constitutional forces.